So I'm going to be presenting the findings from a modeling study seeking to estimate the impact and cost effectiveness of scaling up chlamydia and gonorrhea screening in the United States. So as you just heard, chlamydia and gonorrhea screening are recommended for sexually active women under the age of 25 and older women with risk factors, which could include more than one partner, a partner with an STI, a new partner, or a partner with concurrent partners. This has a B rating from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. Until September 2014, the chlamydia and gonorrhea recommendations were separate, and then they were combined. So mathematical models have traditionally focused on chlamydia screening as an isolated service. They generally suggested that chlamydia screening is cost-effective in U.S. settings, but the utilization rates of chlamydia screening are rather low. The HEDIS measure for 2015 suggests that about 38% to 60% of women who have either commercial or Medicaid insurance are screened. And the National Survey of Family Growth, asking women to self-report if they had been screened for chlamydia, 2006 to 2008, the screening rate was 37.9%. Now, models that have looked at this and tried to assess the cost effectiveness have typically focused on these levels of utilization. And so we asked, what if chlamydia and gonorrhea screening were ramped up and offered to all eligible women? Would that be cost effective? So in 2006, there was a paper published looking at clinical preventive services across the spectrum, not just STI-related. And they had a table of 25, and chlamydia screening was right in the middle, 13th out of 25, in terms of clinically preventable burden and cost effectiveness. So it wasn't as good as things like the childhood immunization series, but it came in above some other preventive services that are fairly commonly offered, such as cholesterol screening of high-risk adults. So what we did is we sought to estimate the cost effectiveness of chlamydia and gonorrhea screening as a combined intervention if it was offered to all eligible women covered by the guidelines that I mentioned in the beginning, and we assumed 95% would accept it. We assumed that the testing cost would be constant. In other words, you wouldn't have to spend more to find additional numbers of women as you got a higher and higher proportion. And we assumed that all women would have an annual health care visit where the screening could be offered opportunistically. So this is sort of an aspirational study. If it could be done, would it be cost effective? We estimated the cost for a single year cohort of women. So they enter the model at age 15. They're followed for 29 years through age 44 when they age out. We calculated the discounted present value of costs incurred throughout the time frame, and then the analytic horizon includes the lifetime cost of any sequelae. And we did this. This may sound like a somewhat unusual way to go about it, but we're matching the methodology of that priorities for clinical preventive services analysis that I showed you recently, two slides ago. So we sought to estimate the impact of 95% screening on population prevalence, and to do this, we adapted a previously published model that focused on chlamydia screening only. So here's a graphic depiction of what we're talking about. At T equals zero, the first year, a single-year cohort of 15-year-old adolescent women enter the model, and there are about 2.1 million of them, and they progress through annually, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. They're getting screened for chlamydia every single year, incurring costs. Periodically, they may test positive for chlamydia, and at which point they'll be treated. And then every once in a while, the women may develop a case of pelvic inflammatory disease, and that gets treated as well. So we assess the direct medical costs for screening, treatment, and treatment of sequelae, plus the patient time and travel costs for medical visits associated with these services. We did not assess productivity losses or intangible costs for some technical reasons related to the valuing of the health outcomes. We use quality-adjusted life years that often incorporate a utility loss for things like time off work. And so we assessed these losses for PID only, not acute chlamydia, and we didn't assess any quality loss for chlamydia in men. So this is from the original model that was chlamydia screening only. The solid line shows you the reduction in population level prevalence you get when you screen 30% of eligible women, and then the dotted line shows what the prevalence drop is over time with screening 95% of women. So the heavy dotted line at the very top, the dark red one, shows the chlamydia prevalence in women with no intervention at all. And then you see that there's a 13.5% reduction in population prevalence of women if you're screening 30% of those women annually. And then if you ramp the screening up to 95%, you get a further reduction in population prevalence. This is very much in line with what transmission models typically predict for any preventive service that is widely implemented. So here are the variable values that we use. For gonorrhea and chlamydia prevalence, the source was primarily NHANES. We assumed 40% of patients with gonorrhea would also be co-infected with chlamydia. That value is pretty standard. Probability of symptoms for either of these infections in women was relatively low. The probability of treatment, we assumed 89% of those who were either symptomatic and sought treatment on their own or were asymptomatic and detected through screening would be treated. And then probability of PID in untreated infection would be 15%, and then 4.5% if they were successfully treated. The reason we assessed a probability of PID in women who were treated is because with a prevalent case, they may have already developed PID before they get screened and treated. And then here are the costs. They're drawn primarily from the literature. And again, all costs are discounted back to the initial year of entry. So for a group of 15-year-old women, you're looking at doing this over the next 29 years. Is it cost-effective today, using today's dollars? Here are the data sources for the two tables I just showed you. And here are the results. With no screening, again, this is for a single-year cohort of women, you've got about 68,000 quality-adjusted life years lost due to chlamydia and its sequelae, and with cost of treatment. If you do annual screening of 95%, the quality loss drops to about 21,000. It does cost some money to do the screening and treatment, so it's not a cost-saving intervention, but you're delivering those cost benefits at about $32,825 per quality. And this is applied to a single-year cohort of women, but it's important to remember that this assumes this level of screening is happening population-wide. If you took a single-year cohort of women and those were the only ones getting screened, the population prevalence would not drop because the remainder of the population would not be receiving screening. So $32,000 per quality saved puts it well within the realm that is typically considered cost-effective for an intervention in the U.S. Oftentimes, WHO guidelines or World Bank guidelines suggest that 1 to 3 times per capita GDP per quality or dolly saved is reasonable. Per capita GDP in the U.S. is about $50,000. So in conclusion, full screening of the eligible population of women, these preliminary estimates suggest that it would be a cost-effective intervention compared to no screening, and that it could provide substantial health gains. The old U.S. Preventive Services screening recommendation for chlamydia ranked sort of at the median in terms of cost-effectiveness when compared to a spectrum of clinical preventive services. This recommendation or the analysis is being updated, and the update suggests that chlamydia and gonorrhea screening, even though gonorrhea is a less prevalent infection, it doesn't really drag down the cost-effectiveness or clinically preventable burden at all. And if you're interested in the broader project that is evaluating updated recommendations across the spectrum, again, vaccines, cholesterol screening, obesity counseling, a whole bunch of things, that's going to be on Friday morning at session 5E, intersection of policy science and population health, where the broader analysis will be presented. Thank you.
So thank you, Tom. So now we have time for 3 questions. If any of you have any question, I will ask you to get close to the microphone again. Okay, seems that we have 1 question.
Thank you so much. That was a great presentation. I wanted to know if you ran the cost effectiveness comparison in your model with current rates of screening.
We did, and I did not present those because this is part of that larger project where the comparison they're doing is full utilization of the service versus no utilization. But our preliminary estimate suggests that when you compare screening 30% to screening 95%, when you increase the proportion, it is comparable to or better in cost effectiveness than when you go from 0 to 95%.
Great. Thank you.
Do we have any other question? So
I have one question.
Yes. So when you compare to the original model, the table that you put, that the model were not ranking that pretty high cost effectiveness compared to other diseases, were the assumption different than your model, or is your model like much more, or the time change in 10 years, whatever happened, is like preference change, and actually, or your model includes certain things that the others did not include? How you compare that, if you have?
Well, I may be an optimist. I don't think coming in at the median is all that bad for a condition like this. It's not chronic. I mean, it doesn't have long-term health consequences. Pelvic inflammatory disease is, and it imposes some morbidity. Infertility is probably the most severe. But some of those services are very widely utilized and are expected by patients and routinely offered by clinicians. Mm-hmm. And so chlamydia screening performs relatively well, and yet it's relatively little utilized. So I think that is one of the keys. It's one of the underutilized services, and yet it delivers decent preventable burden and cost effectiveness. And so the updated ratings suggest that that's going to continue to be true, even though you're adding gonorrhea screening into the mix.
Great. Thank you. So there's no more questions. Thank you very much, Tom. Mm-hmm.